I'm here with Alexander Mercurius, editor-in-chief of the Durant. Alexander, let's talk about this shocking story. I think is propaganda, in my opinion, but nonetheless, it's the story about Julian Assange. And, you know, this story floored me. I think it floored you. I think everyone was pretty shocked when the headlines came out. So let me read you the headlines, Alexander, as to what a lot of the mainstream media networks and publications are saying about Assange, his lawyers, the case, Trump, Dana Rohrabacher, and all these people involved in the story. And then you can try to unpack this as best you can. First, Alexander, though, I want to read you a headline from The Guardian, because I think you'll find relevance in it, and I think you'll be able to tie it into this this Assange breaking news. So The Guardian published this on the 18th of February, and it says, Julian Assange, Australian MPs call on UK to block US extradition. Politicians from WikiLeaks founder's home country have flown to UK to visit him in jail. So we have that story on the 18th, and then we have these breaking headlines, Alexander. We start with the Daily Beast. Trump offered Assange pardon if he covered up Russian hack, WikiLeaks founder's lawyer claims. We have from CNN, Alexander, lawyers for WikiLeaks' Assange say he was offered a U.S. pardon for denying Russian hacking. We have from The Hill, Rohrabacher tells Yahoo he discussed pardon with Assange for proof Russia didn't hack DNC email. And from Yahoo, the story that The Hill is referring, Rohrabacher confirms he offered Trump pardon to Assange for proof Russia didn't hack DNC email. From BBC, Dana Rohrabacher denies offering Assange a pardon from Trump. So Rohrabacher denies offering Assange a pardon from Trump. And finally, Alexander, from the Daily Mail, the Mail Online, White House furiously denies claim by Julian Assange at trial that he was offered a presidential pardon if he would say Russia wasn't behind the 2016 hacking of Democratic emails. The four bullet points from the Daily Mail, Alexander, are Assange is wanted on 18 charges in the U.S. for conspiring to expose state secrets. He appeared from Belmarsh Prison, Southeast London, via video link. His lawyer said case isn't ready, so extradition hearing will finish in June. White House called the claim, quote, a complete fabrication and a total lie. So, Alexander, try to unpack this story as best you can.
Yes, I mean, this is a very bizarre story. And to be entirely frank, there's a lot of things about it I don't completely understand. But let's just start with the actual facts of what is being alleged. Now, Dana Rohrabacher was for 29 years a United States representative, elected, I believe, in the state of California. He was a Republican. He was a protege of Ronald Reagan. He was quite a well-known Republican personality. And he was one of the very few people in the Congress who advocated consistently better relations with Russia, pointing out correctly that this was also the policy of Ronald Reagan in his second term. So that's Dana Rohrabacher. Now, when Donald Trump was elected president of the United States, of course, his signature policy at that time was to improve relations with Russia. Trump wanted a rapprochement with Russia. And there was some talk, which I remember, though I never took it very seriously, that some people wanted Dana Rohrabacher to be Secretary of State. I always said that was not going to happen. There was no way that Rohrabacher, with his views, would have ever been confirmed by the Senate. So that never happened. And in fact, Rohrabacher lost his seat in the congressional elections of 2018, when, as we know, the Democrats won back the House. Now, in 2017, just after Trump was elected, Rohrabacher went and met with Julian Assange at the Ecuadorian embassy. And there was a discussion between the two, and I remember it at the time. And I remember Dr. Rohrabacher saying quite openly at the time that he had discussed with Assange the fact about the hack and where, or the alleged hack, I should say, of the DNC, and that in fact Assange once again denied that he'd received the email from the Russians or had been involved in any kind of hack. I remember that at the time. By the way, and this is a completely separate issue, we also know that at around this time, this is the spring of 2017, there were negotiations going on between the FBI and Julian Assange for Julian Assange to provide information to the US to sort out issues relating to Russiagate, and in fact to give evidence about this. And we know that those negotiations went nowhere because no less a person than James Comey put a stop to them. So this is a parallel discussion that was also going on at that precise time. Now, what is very important to make clear, and I remember it from then, and Rora Baker and Trump and the White House have confirmed it now, this story that is circulating now, that Rora Baker came and met Assange carrying a offer of a pardon from Donald Trump in return for Assange coming out and saying there had been no Russian involvement in the hack, in obtaining these emails, the DNC emails. That story is completely not true. There's no reality to it. Rora Baker has said very clearly he did not discuss his meeting with Assange in advance with Trump. He was carrying no offer of a pardon for Assange from Trump. All of that is completely not the case. Rora Baker undoubtedly is telling the truth. It accords with my recollection. It's consistent with everything we know. And of course, the White House has confirmed it. So this story that there was an alleged quid pro quo that, you know, Trump was offering via Rora Baker a pardon to Assange in return for Assange denying Russian involvement in providing WikiLeaks with the DNC and Podesta emails, that is not the case. Now, what is the real puzzle for me? What I find I'm struggling to make sense of is why, in that case, as Julian Assange's legal team have brought this issue up now, because I cannot see any clear advantage for them in doing this. Now, I'm going to make a guess, and it is only a guess, that I think that the probable reason is, and I should say, by the way, when I first heard about this story, I found this so difficult to understand that I questioned whether this, you know, these reports of what Assange's lawyers were telling the court, I questioned whether those reports could be true and whether there might be some misreporting. But I verified that they are true and that, in fact, this was, in fact, said by the lawyers. And it is, in fact, in a witness statement that was prepared by one of his lawyers, who is a lawyer called Jennifer Robinson. So why was it done? I'm going to make a guess, and it's a guess. I don't know this for a fact. But I think what the line of defense here is, and it must be understood that this is only one conceivable line of defense amongst the many that Assange is going to be making, is that Donald Trump offered him a pardon in return for Julian Assange confirming that he did not get the emails from the Russians. Julian Assange has many times confirmed that he did not get the emails from the Russians. Therefore, he has carried out the terms, you know, he has accepted, if you like, Donald Trump's offer. There is therefore an agreement between Assange and Donald Trump, who is the president of the United States, a complete agreement, offer and acceptance, if you like, and that stops, to use the legal word, that's ESTOP, WPED, stops the United States from pursuing criminal proceedings against him. That seems to me the only explanation I can come up with for what seems to me this very bizarre decision to bring this up. Now, if this is correct, then I am going to do something I've never done before, which is I'm going to say that I am in disagreement with a tactic pursued by his legal team, because I don't think this is going to work at multiple levels. Firstly, I don't think, even if there had been this offer of a pardon from Trump, and Julian Assange had acted, if you like, on that offer of a pardon by, you know, saying that it was not the Russians who provided him with the emails. Even if that was true, I don't think that would have been binding either on the US government or on the British courts, or would affect the extradition request in any way. That's my own view. Others may disagree with that. But the underlying problem is that this offer was never made at all in the first place. Rohrabacher says it wasn't made. Donald Trump says it wasn't made. My recollection of the events at the time make it clear to me that it wasn't made. So there was no offer, no acceptance, and therefore, by definition, no complete agreement and no estoppel. I think that it was a mistake to make this, to raise this point, and I would have kept very clear from it. But this is the best explanation I can give for a move I don't fully understand.
Yeah, and the media jumped on that that point, as they as obviously would be expected. Because,
absolutely.
You know, you have the case coming up, and if there's one thing the media wants to do is they want to bury Assange, they want to tie him to Russia, and they want to tie him to Trump. Because then it legitimizes the entire Russiagate hoax for them, in their minds.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it makes it seem, and I think a lot of people seeing these headlines are now seeing it as Julian Assange somehow admitting that he did get the emails from the Russians, you know, even though he's always denied doing so.
It's exactly what people think.
It's exactly
what the headlines are saying, exactly. And that's the impression you get.
Exactly. So it seems to me it's a very bad idea to create a legal line of defense, which clearly isn't going to work for the reasons I said. Firstly, even if there was an agreement, it would not be binding, I am sure, on the US government or on the British courts. And secondly, the underlying facts don't confirm it, contradict it anyway. So it doesn't work. And at the same time, it's creating very bad headlines, very bad media coverage, and it's giving traction to the Russiagate narrative at exactly the moment when it's falling apart. I have to say, someone, in my opinion, has made a serious mistake here. I'm not going to go beyond that and try and guess who that person was or why or how that happened. But I have to say, when I saw it, I was both incredulous and stunned. And when I realized it wasn't a mistake, it wasn't being misreported. I was for the first time entertaining serious doubts about some of the defense strategies that have been pursued around Julian Assange's extradition case. And that's not something I've done up to now.
Yeah, it's everyone scratching their head over this story, Alexander, including Glenn Greenwald. Let me read you two tweets of his and you can comment, because I think he's taking much of the same thinking that you are taking. And he can't make any logic out of it either. No. So this is what Glenn Greenwald said. To recap, the Obama admin refused to indict Assange over the 2010 Manning leaks, seeing it as threatening press freedom. The Trump admin ignored that concern and concocted a theory to criminalize Assange for publishing those docs. Most Dems side with the Trump admin. that so many are uncritically accepting at face value the claims of Assange's lawyer in court as she tries to prevent her client's extradition to U.S. to face the Trump admin's indictment is sheer madness, but indicative of how brains break in the U.S. when Russia is uttered. That was from Glenn Greenwald.
Well, he's absolutely right. May I point out that Glenn Greenwald is a brilliant defense lawyer. I mean, he's also a journalist, obviously. He's best known as a journalist. But he is somebody who has experience of defense, of legal defense work. So, he knows what he's talking about.
The logic is interesting, and it makes sense, because why would Trump, the Trump administration, who pursued Assange more aggressively than the Obama administration, yeah, that's his point, why would they then come back around through Rohrabacher, out of all people, yeah, and float this deal out there?
Yes.
Which you say is non-binding, and they know it would be non-binding. I mean, it doesn't, nothing adds up here.
It doesn't add up at all. I mean, as I said, I think this is somebody's idea creating a kind of, estoppel argument. I mean, I'm using legal language, and I'm sorry, and I apologize, but I can't really come up with a better one. It's basically the idea that, you've acted in accordance with, you've acted in response, if you like, to an offer. And as a result, the person who's made that offer is bound by what you've agreed. So because, Trump allegedly offered him a pardon, that means that because Assange did what Trump wanted, Trump can't have him extradited to the US now. To my mind, it's a flimsy argument. I don't think it has any force in these proceedings. I think the British court will just throw it out. That's my own personal view. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but that's my own view. What it is doing in the meantime is creating some disastrous headlines, both for Julian Assange, and dare I say it also for Donald Trump, at the precise moment when Russiagate is unraveling, when we see, as I said, Barr and Durham's investigations closing in, when there's more and more questions about some of the prosecutions that were brought against people like Stone and Flynn and Papadopoulos, and all of these things are now being questioned. And suddenly, Julian Assange's own legal team, in pursuit of a line of defense, which, as I said, if I've understood it correctly, in my opinion, isn't going to work, have now given some credence to this Russiagate conspiracy hoax, which is disintegrating. I mean, it seems to me very counterproductive, both from Assange's point of view and from Donald Trump's. And I mean, I don't understand it at all. And I think people need to take a step back and think very carefully about what they say in this situation. I mean, this is a very difficult case. I'm not underestimating at all the problems that Julian Assange's legal team face. In fact, they are huge. They face a openly hostile court. They face a media that is very unfavorable to their client. But against that, they have undoubtedly in Britain a growing groundswell of support. There is a letter from the doctors who have been complaining about the conditions in which he's in. There was an uprising within Belmarsh itself by the prisoners in Belmarsh who were complaining about the terrible conditions in which he was being kept. And the result was that those conditions have been improved. There is a letter that I know which is circulating amongst international jurists to have the extradition cases blocked, which is also gaining traction. And of course, as you rightly said, we've now had this delegation of MPs from Australia, including Liberal MPs, by the way, who've come along and have said that it is most inappropriate that he's being extradited to the United States, and he's clearly a journalist, and the extradition proceedings should be dropped, and he should be released. So there is a groundswell of opinion. Even parts of the mainstream media, people like how now speaking up in defense of him, people like Roy Greenslade, for example, in The Guardian, is trying to mobilize British editors to bring out a statement in support of Assange, as mainstream media editors. I mean, it's going to be a very tough thing to do. It seems to me that making these kind of claims in court, which are false anyway, are going to undermine all of that. So as I said, I think some people need to take a step back and ask themselves, you know, is this really sensible? Is this the right way forward?
Something doesn't smell right.
No, something doesn't smell right.
With everything coming to a head with the Assange case and all of the news that you just rattled off about the groundswell of support that's coming from all sides for Assange, I start to think is it possible that certain people in Assange's defense team, where I'm sure there's a lot of people on his defense team, that you have certain people in his defense team who are kind of saying, you know what, let's try to save Julian by, you know, giving this Russia hack thing legs and throwing the Trump admin, you know, under the bus, the administration under the bus, you know, just saying to the deep state, okay, yes, Russia hacked emails, Russia did it, yes, and all this stuff. I mean, do you have that kind of, you know, TDS, that Trump derangement syndrome, infiltrating a little bit of the defense team? If you can answer that, great. If you can't, that's fine. But something doesn't smell right. Something seems very off here.
Right. Three things to say. Firstly, I don't know about that. I mean, I really don't know. I don't have that kind of access to the inner thinking of Julian Assange's legal team. The second thing is, I'm afraid Trump derangement syndrome is very powerful in Britain. And there's no reason to doubt that, you know, there are many people within the legal world who are possessed by it. And it's entirely possible. I'm sorry to say this. I hope this is wrong, but it's entirely possible that there are some people within the legal defense team who have been swayed by it also. And thirdly, if they are doing that, if that is the tactic that they're following, the one that you've just said, then I'm afraid that they need to put all those ideas entirely to one side, because my own strong conviction is that will not only fail, it will fail catastrophically. It won't stop Julian Assange being extradited to the United States. It will turn opinion in Britain against him at precisely the moment when it's starting to turn in his favor. And I can't say that too strongly. Now, I've been very careful in all our videos, all our various programs up to now, not to try to second guess what his legal team is doing, not to try to provide commentary on it. It's something I do with great misgivings. But I think this, in this instance, I think this is so, I don't understand it at all. And it feels
extraordinary. It's
so extraordinary. And frankly, it fills me with so many serious doubts and concerns that I'm breaking my own rule and making my feelings about this very clear. I just don't think this is going to work. If that is the tactic, I think it's going to backfire. I think that there is a very strong case, an exceptionally strong case, for not extraditing Assange to the United States. It's been made by many people. It's been made by Niels Meltzer, who is the UN rapporteur on torture. It's been made by doctors and physicians from around the world. It's been made by international jurists. It's been made by journalists. It's been made increasingly by politicians, including by politicians in Australia. It's been made by prisoners locked up in Belmarsh. It's been made by more and more people in Britain and all over the world. So, you know, let's not throw all that away in pursuit of very, very esoteric legal defense lines, which just aren't going to work because, quite apart from anything else, they are not founded on any basis of fact. As I said, Rora Bakker and the White House have denied it, and I am sure that they're telling the truth.
All right. So wrap up the video, Alexander. Where do we go from here? How do you see things unfolding now with this extraordinary situation?
Well, I hope that this isn't the start of, you know, a whole line of defense and the people, you know, I know a lot of people are unhappy and uneasy about this. And I hope that if anybody has these bad ideas in the legal team, you know, they will listen and draw back. And we will have this very difficult case fought out properly on the serious humanitarian, human rights, criminal defense issues, freedom of speech issues, which are the ones that ultimately matter. So what Greenwald was saying, Greenwald, as I said, knows all about, he understands law. Other people who, you know, discuss this also understand how to fight these cases. And I think let's have it done in a bit more conventional way, rather than if this is some bizarre line of defense, trying to pursue a line of defense, which I cannot see how it can work, but which may make, if I'm sure will make, Julian Assange's position much more difficult.
All right. Alexander Mercuris, Editor-in-Chief of The Durand. Thank you very much. Guys, if you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Click on the notifications bell. Smash that like button. Please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. Your donation really helps us out because we get demonetized now pretty much on every video, and I'm sure this video will also be demonetized. So your help is very, very much appreciated, and you can also help us out by going to the Durand shop and picking up some magic mugs, which will boost your IQ and your geopolitical quotient and just about everything.
And indeed, magic mugs, which do indeed boost your IQ to phenomenal levels. And here is my oldest, most trusty magic mug, which I've had now for, I think it's more than a year. And you can see what a superb magic mug it is, because it is as good as new. It is exactly as it was when I first had it in my hands. And, you know, I can't even count the numbers of cups of tea I've drunk from this. They must run into thousands by now, because I survive on tea. And this particular magic mug has the double-headed eagle of the Durand. You can just see it there. Different from that of Russia, by the way, or from the Byzantine Empire or anything like that. But it's the same double-headed eagle that you will find on these shirts that we produce, including this magnificent polo shirt, which I am wearing now, 100% cotton, beautifully made, extraordinarily comfortable, amazingly stylish. You can wear it in the most glittering social occasions. It is the epitome of smart casual. I mean, you can go to a really, you know, 6-star restaurant, Michelin starred, 3-star restaurant, and I've actually been to some really great restaurants in Berlin recently, where I was. You can wear a shirt like this, and my goodness, the waiters will treat you with the most remarkable deference. Trust me, I know. So that's how good our Durand polo shirts are. But you will also find amazing other shirts. You will find long sleeve T-shirts and short sleeve T-shirts, all of the same quality, all 100% cotton, all with the double-headed eagle of the Durand on them. You will find V-neck shirts. You will also find hoodies, hats, stickers. And of course, don't forget our magnificent magic mugs, which, as we said, will boost your IQ so phenomenally. And you will also find on our shop of ebooks, in which we discuss the various topics that we have talked about in our various programs, including Russiagate, in more detail, but also more thoroughly and clearly, I hope, that and putting together all the various points that we've made in our videos, so that it all becomes clear and understandable. And let me repeat again what Alex said: we are under constant pressure. Not everything we say is popular with all kinds of people. We have lots of people who would rather that we weren't saying the things we are saying, because, you know, we are trying to have the searchlight of truth, you know, cutting through the darkness. And some people don't want that darkness dissipated. So you support the Durand by buying these things from our shop, and you are the proud owner of these great things from our shop. So you have every reason to come to our shop to support yourself and to support the Durand. So come along and do that, and Alex will tell you how.
Just go to theduranshop.com. You'll find the link in the description box down below. Alexander McCurse, editor-in-chief of The Duran. Thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.